Guardian Unlimited.
I'm Paul McInnes, and this is Music Weekly from Guardian Unlimited. Apparently, there was a bit of an outdoor music festival going on last weekend. Might even have rained a bit too. But, tell me, did you enjoy Peter Hall's production of La Cenerentola at Glyndebourne? Coming up on this week's show, the music, the mud, the mayhem, the reviews, the interviews, all the gossip from the backstage loos. Ladies and gentlemen, with the final and definitive word on Glastonbury 2007 and not a mention at all of Peter Hall, this is Music Weekly from Guardian Unlimited. Hiya. We brought you the Mudcast over the weekend, live-ish, from our filthy porter cabin behind the Pyramid stage. And it got filthier too, I can tell you that for nothing. Now we're back on terra firma, back in the pod, and we're so clean you could probably eat your dinner off us. You know who's here in the studio, but I'm going to introduce them anyway. First up, older and wiser than when you last heard from her, and not least because today's her birthday, it's Guardian Unlimited music writer Rosalina Swash. How does it feel to be 25?
Pretty grim.
Pretty grim.
Still downhill from here.
Yeah, it is.
Told you about dropping collagen levels, haven't I?
Yeah. Droop ahoy. And hello to Music Weekly producer Ben Green, who scrubbed himself so clean, he's no longer got a beard. And you may not have seen this beard, but it was truly a sight to behold, and now it's gone. Ben, shock.
Clearly this pod is only big enough for one beard, and that'll be yours.
Yeah, that is me. So, to recap, this was the biggest Glastonbury ever, with 180,000 people on Worthy Farm and almost 600 live sets from the best indie rock and dance bands around, not to mention a few world and jazz acts as well. It was also the wettest festival in its 37-year history, which is surprising, really, given how wet things have been in the past. And it might also have been the most commercial, although more on that later. But we're going to kick off with the music and our reviews. For all of you who were there, and for those of us who watched it on the telly, here's a quick reminder to get us started. This, dear listeners, is an A to Z, well, an A to who, of the sound of Glastonbury 2007 in 60 seconds.
Baking hot up here, but you're fantastic.
I'm feeling all nostalgic already. That was the Arctic Monkeys, Bjork, the Chemical Brothers, Kasabian, Lily Allen with the Specials, Dame Shirley Bassey and The Who. We saw as much live music as humanly possible while we were there, but we thought we might kick off by just batting around how we saw the festival and what our picks were and what our faves were and what was missing. And I suppose the first question is really, everybody goes to Glastonbury and they look to have a Glastonbury experience, seeing an act perform to a level the likes of which they've never seen before and anticipate never seeing again. Did anybody really have a legendary show this time around, Rosie?
Well, I think they did, and I don't think I got to watch them.
No.
Iggy Pop and the Stooges is apparently just amazing. Everyone that was there, they were phoning other people, come and watch this now, this is amazing. And there I was reviewing The Killers, who are not one of my favourite bands.
No, I kind of stumbled past the other stage, though, about halfway through that, because I watched the beginning of The Killers. That was the night of the terrible sound.
Yeah.
And you just couldn't hear them at all, particularly if you weren't dead straight in front of the stage. And a lot of people were drifting off. I drifted off, and I went to the other stage, and there was bugger all people there.
Oh, really?
It was half empty.
They were all on stage.
Yeah,
invading it.
They probably were, because there was halfway through the act, there was a stage invasion of about 400 people beckoned on by Iggy. But yes, I've heard similar reports that it was quite special. And why do you think that was?
Possibly because no one was really expecting it. You know, he's known for putting on a great show, but I don't think people go, you know, the same with The Who, I don't think people go and see people of that age and particularly expect to enjoy it. And I think he just knew exactly how to whip people up and just say to people, just let go and come on, let's do this. Mm. And it's exactly what it was. I mean, maybe it wasn't that good. Maybe it was easier to think that something that you weren't at was legendary.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, are there any other acts that we should have been clocking? Or?
Well, just in terms of the best performance, and certainly by my reckoning, Bjork's performance was legendary. And she just showed that she's the most creative female artist around and showed Mark Ronson what she can do with a horn section and can just switch from genre to genre, work up a crowd and do a show. That, for me, was the highlight in terms of a gig, and the sound was great.
Mm. Because I was at the Arcade Fire just before that, and that would be amongst my top performances. I think they really came and they brought it. They brought what they usually give to their shows, which is such an intense religious passion. But they couldn't carry the crowd with them. Whatever it was that Iggy Pop did, they couldn't manage it. This was a set that was filled with kind of sing-along, great ascending, soaring numbers. They just didn't make that link, and I'm not sure what it was. And I felt the Arctic Monkeys didn't move the crowd, and I could see quite patently why that was. It was because, one, the sound wasn't great, and two, you know, Alex Turner, he has a real charisma and he has a magnetism about it, but it isn't that kind of what you're saying, I'll interact with you, I'm going to lead you and conduct you, which, you know, you compare with the likes of Ricky Wilson, who's maybe knocked as a not-so-serious a musician, but has a can establish a rapport with tens of thousands of people very quickly, and I didn't think that Turner did that. And I suppose, really, that the Arcade Fire, that isn't the sort of thing they do either. They expect people to follow them along.
No, I think, I mean, one of the things Arcade Fire's got in nearly all of their tunes is a bit where you can go, doo-doo, you know, everybody usually does it, and people just weren't doing that.
No.
And it's like, come on, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, if you can't sort of let go and be a bit of an idiot at Glastonbury, then it's never going to happen.
No,
for
I think that's right. I guess moving away from that, the headliners, and perhaps away from the pyramid and the other stage, there's obviously hundreds and hundreds of other things going on. And Rosie, what would be your picks from the smaller stages?
Well, it is definitely one of my highlights from the festival, if not the highlight, was Beirut on the Jazz World stage.
And for our listeners who don't know who Beirut is?
Beirut is Zach Condon, Fishy, and his band. You could call it folk polka, and it's, you know, there's lots of horns, and it's just it's like gentle and powerful all at the same time. And it really was, I've said this before several times, but it was like a real tonic on Sunday night. And that was an example of a smaller stage and everybody just being totally up for it and clapping along. And Zach Condon just has this untailored intensity about him and his persona on stage. He just totally got it. He got what the whole thing was about, and so did everyone in the crowds. And I just loved it. It was just incredibly beautiful.
Benjamin?
I've got two picks for you. First up was Bob Marley's Kids. I went to see them with a singer called Angel, who I bumped into and met. And it was her birthday.
Ben bumps into a singer called Angel.
Angel Anderson.
Angel Anderson, if you're listening.
I've done some research today, actually, and she shares a name with a Playboy playmate from 2002, but it's not the same one. Anyway.
That just doesn't surprise me at all.
Anyways,
ben, what
I
kind
went
of
to
thing,
see...
No, I, went, what, I want to go back to Angel Anderson. What kind of singing does Angel Anderson do?
Angel's does kind of folky, poppy, very good. I was listening to it before we started. I highly recommend. It was her birthday.
But what was the
And
connection?
She had a pink balloon, and I wore a pink balloon as well.
You wore a pink balloon. So it was the pink balloons that brought you together.
Then we went to see Stephen and Damian Marley. It was just brilliant. And the sun came out when they started doing Exodus. Everyone was dancing.
Did Angel lean her head on your shoulder when at some of the
mock? Stop it.
What?
Just leave him alone.
What? It's not.
We were speculating, though. You went AWOL for quite a long time, and we were speculating as to whether you'd got into the Glastonbury fever and had maybe, you know, married some sort of
on the stone circle. And it sounds like you were pretty close to so doing. And so what was your other one, Ben?
The other one was Billy Bragg on the Avalon stage. Did a really, really excellent acoustic set. I've never seen Billy Bragg live, and I got the whole shebang of him doing all of his lefty kind of anti-Blair, drop the deck kind of thing, which, you know, normally I would think, but it was so good. I like those sentiments, but I'm not really one who's going to whoop and holler at that kind of thing. But I did. I got caught up in the moment. He was a fantastic showman, and when he played Great Leap Forward, it was just an absolutely mesmerising moment. So he was... Bjork was my top pick for just all in spectacle. Billy Bragg moved me the most.
I'm Paul McInnes, and you're listening to our review of Glastonbury 2007 right here on Music Weekly from Guardian Unlimited. Still to come.
I'm glad I did think about bringing three pairs of trousers.
We'll hear Jack Pignatte. Yes, that's Jack Pignatte and his three trousers. Another festival first-timers, Good Shoes and Get Cape, talk about the luxury items in their luggage, amongst other things. Plus, we'll be finding out what you lot thought about Glasto 2K7. OK, so we've gone through what we like, but we made brief mention there of the Killers not quite cutting the mustard. Are there any other bands that you saw who were perhaps a little bit disappointing?
I enjoyed Amy Winehouse. I really did. I think, you know, her live voice is flawless. You know, she did put on a good show. But when you're that kind of act and you're on the main stage, you really need to do something special. Now, for example, Lily Allen brought on the Specials. I didn't actually mean to, but that, you know, or she did a couple of covers, and Amy Winehouse's set was almost identical to every set that she does now. She does a cover of Toots and the Maytals, she does a cover of the Zootons, and it's been said she obviously wasn't sober, she was totally detached from the experience, and I just think there's something a little bit insulting about that. I think you're on the main stage, it's probably not going to happen for you again, and you're probably not going to remember any of it, and I just think that's a real shame. Personally, you know, most people rise to the occasion and do something that no one is expecting because you can get away with it. Arctic Monkeys did a cover of Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah.
Shirley Bassey did Big Spender twice.
Yeah.
Because people were like, yeah, I love that.
But did we feel that there was actually a bit of a trend of not doing that?
Yeah, there were certainly the people that I didn't enjoy were the people that you just thought that could have been anywhere.
No, I think I kind of agree with you. Ben?
As you said, the Killers, I felt completely passionless and the sound was awful, so left that. The most disappointing show I saw was on the Sunday kind of early evening. I saw Willie Mason do a quick show over in the park. He just played the wrong type of set. He needed to get the crowd up and kind of buzzy, and he didn't. He played very slow songs, and I love Willie Mason. He sort of redeemed himself by playing Oxygen right at the end, which was fantastic, but the wrong set at the wrong time.
Yeah, that was another... I think you've hit another nail on the head there, Ben. I think there was a common feeling that people wanted to be made to move and made to cheer and made to dance, and sometimes that didn't comply with what the bands wanted to do themselves. And again, that comes back to the idea of them not being flexible, not changing things for Glastonbury. This is their music. They want to present it in a particular way. It's up to the crowd to follow them, and it's an interesting dilemma, and one I think that you probably just have to, as an artist, make some kind of compromise on.
Yeah,
sometimes
I agree.
Particularly when it's absolutely shooting it down in the
freezing
field
cold.
Yeah, and freezing cold where people are standing. That is Jack Pignatte, who put in a storming performance on the John Peel stage on Friday night. It was Jack's first time at Glastonbury, and I spoke to him a little before we went on stage to find out what smaller artists need to do when they make that step up to playing in front of a festival crowd.
I think it's like anything in life, it's practice.
Yeah.
I think, imagine if the more and more you do it, the more and more you get to know how to somehow make it like your personal. Or you do the thing of like, you make yourself a kind of almost kind of godlike. You kind of do that thing of like, you're so removed that you're kind of look up in awe, the Michael Jackson type of thing. I've been to all three world tours, and he would do things like, in between a song, would just stop and breathe for 3 minutes, just go, and everyone would just like get built up, and then he'd go like, and then stop, and then stand there for like 5 minutes. And it's like, that stuff just makes him like, literally, he was like an alien.
Well, Jack's mates Good Shoes were also making their debut this year, not just as performers, but also camping out in the mud. They've been on our show before, I'm sure you'll recall, but Ben caught up with them at the Guardian Lounge just as the bass started to boom.
We've never been to Glastonbury before, like, none of us. We used to go to...
Joel has.
Oh, yeah, Joel has, yeah.
But, yeah, like, we just played our main gig on the John Peel stage, and now we're doing the gig here in Guardian, and...
It's really good, that John Peel gig was... It was just, like, packed out and just... I think the most fun I've maybe ever had at a festival... Well, Wireless in London on there, that was really good, but I think this was equal. Like, different sort of crowd, but really good. But, yeah, the first time I've ever been here, and, like, we're finishing all our work today, and then we've got Saturday, Sunday off, so... Have a bit of a wander around.
It's very big.
Is it living up to all your expectations, or is it best to just kind of discover it for yourself?
I have no idea what's here. Like, we did an interview earlier, and Steve said he wanted to if they're going to make Glastonbury better, what should they have? And he said a circus, and I was like, they've probably got one. I think
there is a circus, there's a circus.
So, just to explore, find out stuff like that.
Have you got any luxury items in your luggage, seeing as you're here for another couple of days?
No, I've got two T-shirts, three pairs of underwear, four pairs of socks, and a jumper. And I put them in a little bag. That's all I've got.
I'd say a pillow. That's probably about as luxurious as it gets for me.
We stayed in the Travelodge last night, and we all stole a lot of pillows so we could have somewhere to sleep, like, or have something to put on our heads. But yeah, meat. I've got meat. That's maybe my luxury item. Yeah, I have to eat it tonight because we bought a lot of meat, and we're thinking, like, actually it's getting quite warm now, so we're gonna have to, like, eat it. We have a big barbecue in our tour manager's campsite.
That's Steve Leach and Rhys Jones from the excellent Good Shoes. Their single Morden is out now, and their website is still brilliant, and it's at goodshoes.co.uk. So we've heard there from some acts about their preparations for Glastonbury, and obviously that kind of whole festival thing, beyond the music and beyond you actually having fun, is a very important component, and the key word is preparation. But I've always got the feeling that no matter how hard you prepare, you're still going to be caught out at the end of it. Now, Rosie, I know you've got a new pledge already as to what you're going to do next time you go to a festival.
Two pairs of wellies, definitely, because what I couldn't work out was why my wellies were damp on the inside. It was really, really horrible because obviously they get freezing cold. And obviously it just takes a little bit of water in there. So halfway through, so you put them back on in the morning with fresh, clean socks, doesn't matter. So next year, two pairs, maybe even three.
But that's a case of putting your waterproof trousers on the outside, isn't it?
I didn't have waterproof trousers.
I would take some waterproof trousers next.
You can't go around interviewing bands not having had a shower for 5 days, dressed like something out of I Know What You Did Last Summer. it's not going to cut them out.
I suspect the waterproof material might actually keep the stench inside. It's kind of one of those, yeah. As long as it's a one-way breathable fabric.
You just get a waft of it.
I'm not sure I remember to take anything particularly useful this time. I always take a cool bag, right? Because I think I'm going to have a picnic someday. I always forget to buy anything to keep it cool.
Turns out it was cold enough to keep it cool.
Well, it was actually, yeah. So my pork pies lasted to Saturday lunchtime.
You bought absolutely indestructible bananas
this year. We stopped off in Morrison's in Bristol, a stop which involved me performing an illegal right-hand turn, which Rosie's still recovering from. And I bought a big bag of bananas, and I resolutely refused to turn anything but the deepest green.
Do you want to know what my luxury item was?
I certainly would.
Well, no, apart from a laptop and a mobile studio, which was massively practical to have there.
Particularly when you were looking it back in your wheelie suitcase at 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday.
Oh, stop it. I brought two pillows. Two pillows for a double bed mattress thing.
Wow.
Left them there.
That was the thing, wasn't it, that they were encouraging you to leave your stuff behind this time?
Yeah, because they collect up the tents afterwards, and wellies as well, actually, and they give them, I think tents is shelter. I'm not sure about wellies. I imagine wellies might be going to secondary, like the secondary ticketing market, the secondary welly market.
It's going to poor
but
farmers.
Yeah, so you can feel good about leaving your tent there.
Yeah.
Which, trust me, people might not understand, but if you've been there for 5 days and you are soaking wet and you want to go home, you do not want to take a tent down in the rain.
No, and fold it up, put it in the bag and leave it for another year, and then pull it out. It was actually a very practical thing because people have always been dumping their tents, but it goes to charity, which is another crucial thing about Glastonbury. There's always the causes, and there's always a lot of information on site and a lot of messages from performers on site kind of directing you to particular messages. I remember stumbling into the left field stage. I'm always stumbling, by the way, not in this. I wandered into the left field stage and found about 25 people watching a huge debate, loads of trade unionists and various different artists talking about the future of race discrimination legislation, and it was I was looking for Harfi at the time. Only at Glastonbury could that happen. But I do wonder whether there is an appetite for this sort of stuff, though. I know there's been a couple of complaints that the festival itself has maybe got a little bit more commercial, with there being more people, with the average price of a meal being £6, and with little opportunity to get your own water. Instead, you have to buy Glastonbury spring water. Conversely, I wonder whether there's actually this middle-class audience like ourselves who go aren't actually particularly interested in the politics anymore either, and whether the two things have kind of gradually drifted apart.
Well, there might not be an appetite for it. I certainly don't want to go and watch a debate on race legislation at Glastonbury as opposed to going to see a band. But the very presence of it makes a difference to the atmosphere. And it's not just... There was a huge charity presence. Stella McCartney designed this one-off vest for Oxfam to sell, and they raised something like 40 grand total profit for Oxfam. And that's just one example of the many, many, many things that go on.
To me, does that not sound like an awful lot of money?
Well, I think on its own, if all anybody raised was 40 grand for charity, then it wouldn't be a very successful charity festival. But that was an example of the many other ones.
No, I understand.
Why don't you tell me some of the charities?
I'm just surprised that if you put out an exclusive Stella McCartney thing for sale that you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, but it is Glastonbury and everything's very expensive. And I think one bit of advice I can give everyone is give money to charity, buy things like that, but really don't spend your money on useless things. Like, I was very tempted to buy a mini guitar on Sunday night. And I just thought, I'm going to run out of money, you can't. Anyway,
you'll have to bust your way home.
And it's also, there's other things I noticed, which I've been talking about this a lot, no one else seems to get it, but the park stage, the park area, was one of my favourite bits, and it was really old school Glastonbury. Like, for example, all around it they had this bunting, which, you know, flags bunting, and each one had been scribbled on by little kids, and by scribbled on, obviously I mean carefully designed and drawn. And I just thought, and I caught sight of it, and I just thought, right, someone has taken that round primary schools round Somerset to get these kids to design it, to put it up, and it looked really, really lovely and cute. And it's like, if that had been some other festival, that would have been a big old opportunity for advertising, and someone somewhere had gone to the trouble for this very small thing. And I just thought, that's Glastonbury, you know. Yeah, there's little things like that. Yeah, that you do not get anywhere else.
Ben?
Well, I have no frame of reference, this being my first time there, but I'd have to say I was slightly underwhelmed. I had these kind of expectations of seeing lots of crusties, lots of dreadlocks and hummus, and these fantastic stalls where you could buy organic everything, it was all freshly made. And I was disappointed that everything, all the food was expensive, it was all burgers and chips. I did find a nice fruit stall.
But did you go to the Healing Fields and the Green Fields and places like that?
No, I didn't. But I wanted it all to be like that.
I know.
Because I was just quite surprised by it. It seemed like Camden Market, a lot of it, and Freshers Week.
But that's the thing about Glastonbury now, is that, you know, it is a massive operation. It's also almost like a part of the British calendar. Mm. It's a real national festival, and so you have the two things. The traditional Glastonbury and the mainstream element of Glastonbury, of which we form part ourselves. And, you know, looking around, we were saying there was very few teenagers there. We couldn't spot that many hippies or even that many crusties. And that's because many more people like us are going. And it's that, I think it's actually quite a tribute to the festival, despite the fact they don't sell many Stella McCartney tops, that the spirit of Glastonbury still remains, and it's still strong, and you can tell what it is, in that it's a focus on good causes, a levelling off of all pretension, and its ability to kind of muck in the mud. So, let's move on from that, having told Ben Green where he needs to spend his next festival, right up in the fields. Although, Ben, I'd wonder if we ever got you back, whether you'd actually take some Druid exams and go off and practice that someplace else instead. So maybe you're best staying with us. Now, you know what we think. We've also been collating your thoughts and your opinions over the past few days on our blogs. So we're going to play you back some of the best of them. I believe that they're going to be voiced by actors. Is that the case, Ben?
Certainly is. We've been working very hard in pre-production here.
It's like Points of View. This is fantastic. So we're going to start with the complaints. We're going to get those out of the way first. Here's the edited highlights, stroke lowlights, of a rant from a guy called Temple for Jerusalem.
I get the feeling that The Guardian thinks Glastonbury was quite cool this year. Admittedly, it was my first, but what a load of shit. Glastonbury was 99.9% white. The quality of most of the groups was appalling. There was far too little action on the mud front. The food, vastly overpriced with a generally mediocre standard. 3,000 toilets for 180,000 people is way below the building regulations. How did health and safety allow it? Sorry, folks, but all in all, a gratuitous drinking, rowdy, noisy, muddy, expensive waste of time. Huh.
That is a man who is irate and also seems to have several acres of property to his name, judging by the accent.
To complain about the food being mediocre is just like, oh my God, get a life. Did you really go there for the good food?
I do have some sympathy with the loo situation, though. It does seem that there were very few of them relative to how many people there were. And a hell of a long way to go if you're enjoying a show.
No, they had more long drop blues this year than they ever have before, which are much more pleasant, if it's at all possible to use that word, than the you know, plastic portaloos. They had more long drops, and they had some sort of sewer thing going on where it was a longer drop, so the sewers.
I did try to go tantric in the bowel department for the whole thing, but...
What does that mean? You shut it off for 5 days.
Got in a bad mood after 3 days. And even though we had flushing loos in the posh bit where we were, I still think there weren't enough toilets. There you go.
So, going back to Temple 4 Jerusalem, just for a moment, there was a reply to his message, and that reply was made by somebody called Holding Roll, which I think we can hear a bit of now.
Just what did you expect? That's the whole point of it, you numbskull. Please don't waste a ticket and go again. You are the epitome of the reason that Glastonbury is starting to lose its magic.
I think the guy, Temple for Jerusalem, he was into the mud. He was anti it being white. He was all for diversity. So, you know,
He protested too much.
I think the thing is, everybody's come away from Glastonbury with complaints. I don't really know anybody for whom those complaints have ruined the festival for them. I think everybody still, on balance, really enjoyed themselves. But I think from people who couldn't get anything apart from burgers and chips to the people who stood for 4 hours in the rain having to hold their luggage waiting for a bus to get home, I think everybody got some kind of gripe.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think the final word to wrap it up should go to somebody called Fedge.
Okay, so it rained a bit and it was muddy. So what? I had a fantastic time. Loads of bands, laughed a lot, fell over. If you don't like it, don't go again. We won't miss you.
So, more of your comments from the field later. But now I reckon it's time for some more music.
Town that wasn't linked by shows, and fatigue soon ignored. As your feet hit the board, or as the beat hits the floor, these are the moments that we're living for. The ones who constantly try to appease our 9 to 5s, they're the ones who justify.
That is Call Me Ishmael by Get Kate Where Kate Fly, aka Sam Dockworth. Sam was probably the sharpest dressed man at Glastonbury this year. He was wearing a brown linen suit, white shirt, black tie, completely wellies, of course. He also had a Winnebago, which might explain the smartness. Rosie had a chat with him to find out how he was getting on.
You can get so much from a festival. I mean, you can go here aiming to do nothing other than see bands, or you can spend, you know, your weekend in the left field, you know, learning about what's wrong with the world and how you can go and change it. And I think that's a really exciting thing about Glastonbury, is that, you know, it's an outward-looking festival, whereas, you know, a lot of other kind of corporate-sponsored festivals, maybe, you know, the music's still great, but it doesn't really have the same kind of, you know, impetus in terms of, you know, wanting to see the world be a more positive place. It's a very hippie Glastonbury answer, isn't it?
Very serious answer to a serious question. Obviously, you have a Winnebago, so that doesn't count. But if you you could advise anyone to bring one luxury item, what would it be?
I don't think you should bring any luxury items. I think you should go. I mean, everyone's taking a piss out of me because I'm wearing a suit. But my mentality is, if I wear this every day, then it doesn't really matter. So
is that why you chose the suit?
Yeah, and to look good. No, I think if you're going to bring anything, just bring a camera. I mean, we were alcohol shopping last night, and we've got really basic, cheap cider, and then made ourselves have one luxury item of alcohol, and that was pretty much all we did, basically.
What was the luxury alcohol?
We ended up with 14 bottles of spirits, which is a bit dangerous for between five of us for 3 days.
So that's Sam Duckworth, probably the nicest person at the festival. Michael Evers accepted, maybe, or if Bono was there incognito, who knows. He's also massively involved with Love Music Hate Racism, which was probably actually what they were talking about in the left field stage when I wandered up there. And if you haven't gotten around to buying his album Chronicles of a Bohemian Teenager yet, please go out and so do. Now, people have fallen in love at Glastonbury. Some people have even been conceived there, though after 5 days without washing, I'm not so sure that that would seem to be an attractive prospect. Anyway, not all are so lucky. One such person, an unlucky one that is Andrea Stevens. She sent us this email. I was wondering if you could help me. I need to track down someone I met at Glastonbury on Friday, just before block party. I met him. He was a random guy, covered head to toe in mud. I think he had been wrestling. As everyone was laughing at him, I decided to help and took him up to the showers. I waited with him, then walked back to his tent with him. He was dressed in just a towel. It was hilarious. I'm just pausing there for the emotion to settle. We got him back to his tent and found him some clothes. We even agreed to meet the next day, but I became ill. Then I fell down a hole in the mud. This is not funny. And gashed my leg open. I never made it back. I heard from friends he was looking for me near my tent. I never even got his phone number. All I know is that he's called Luke. He's Australian, and I think he's living in London. He's about 24 years old and was camped to the right side of the pyramid stage, up the side of the hill. The people camped by him had a huge black New Zealand flag. Any help is much appreciated. I'm so unlucky. I've been thinking, what if, ever since I came home. I really regret not being able to drag myself back to his tent. Please help. I'll try anything to see Luke again. And as the music builds to a crescendo, I run out of email. This is the bit you probably remember from Simon Bates back in 1992. That's that. Now, if you are Luke from Australia, or you know him, we want your help. We're determined to reunite Andrea with the Mudman, even if the Mudman doesn't necessarily want to see Andrea again. That was our tune coming back there for a second. So what we want is anybody who knows an Australian called Luke, anybody who is packing away their Kiwi flag and thinks they can remember their neighbour, anybody who is in fact Luke, we want you to email us at musings.editor@guardian.co.uk or post a comment on our blog. We're not even going to incentivise you with CDs, tickets and other free stuff this time because, Podders, we're appealing to your belief in the human spirit and the Glastonbury ethos of peace and love. Please, let us find a way to reunite this couple. OK, we're just about ready to wrap this thing up. But before we go, we'll have a quick whip round the pod here. I'd like to know, primarily, what your number one experience of the festival was. That can be music, it can be falafel, it can also be finding a toilet, Ben.
The best thing was... It was going to the kids' field, finding my friends in the kids' field because they'd been performing there. They'd been doing the world premiere of Ice Cream Man and the Jelly Incident, meeting up with them, going off, bumping into Angel, then going to see the Marley Boys and the sun coming out. It was just spectacular.
Yeah, technically that's a whole day.
No, that was basically an hour.
Yeah. Okay, the best.
What
hour.
I want to know, did you actually have anybody shooting you suspicious glances when you're in the kids' field?
Anywhere.
No, but I did realise it was a big faux pas to take pictures.
Very good. And Ben, would you go again?
Yeah, if they could do something about the journey back.
To be honest, it's too early for me to say.
You'll be there.
I'll be there.
You're
I'll
like, I'm not,
there,
I'm not
I?
Doing it again. I'm not doing it. Totally be there.
Rosie, number one highlight?
I really enjoyed trying to interview the man who is sitting in a boat in a tree collecting wishes from people. I got a big audience. Everyone was laughing. It worked. We had something.
In fact, we can hear some of it now.
Wizard, why are you sitting in a boat in a tree?
Because it's a really good thing to look at, and I make everyone smile in the rain. You've got wishes as well.
Generally, are people wishing for dry weather?
I'd say the most popular wish so far is for eternal happiness and sunshine, so yeah.
Maybe the two go hand in hand?
I think they do, yeah. There's not much I can do at the minute. I mean, I'm trying. With the weather, it usually takes about a week, you know. So in a week's time, this feels going to be looking beautiful.
How long have you been in that boat?
Since 11 o'clock this morning.
What's the weirdest wish that you've had so far?
To be a dolphin for a day.
And were you? And I think we already know the answer to this because you've been telling me about your two welly plans, but will you be going again next year?
Definitely, 100%. But I will be driving my own car full of things for me to change into, because it doesn't matter how many pairs of socks you take or how many things you take with you to change into, you always need more.
So basically Rosie's going to take an entire house.
Yep.
Well, for me, I suppose the highlight was I really enjoyed working. That was the odd thing. I really enjoyed kind of running out, colouring the horrors, or Luke Cook, all these sorts of people, taking pictures of them, asking stupid questions, putting it on our blog. But actual festival experience, maybe my highlight was, I suppose there was a moment where we went up to the park when we escaped the killers. We went up to the park stage and we sat in this bar where nobody was. And we started talking to loads of strangers. And then just basically Errol Alkan got on stage. And we didn't realise that Errol Alkan was going to go on stage. I don't think many people did. And just it was just that slowly, just within half an hour, it went from being a completely empty bar to a completely rammed, mad party.
Fantastic.
And that was really good fun.
I do have this kind of feeling at the moment that, you know, it's like Fight Club. The first rule of Fight Club is you mustn't talk about Fight Club. And I really do feel that with the people who have gone to Glastonbury. You're shooting each other glances because, you know, you've been there. I know what you're all about, but you're not allowed to talk about it out loud because this is the final word.
Well, that would appear to be the best way to sum it up, Benjamino, and that is it from us. And thank you so much for all your blog comments, photos and emails. It really helped to make our coverage of the festival pretty damn special. Well, at least I think so. I hope you do too. It's still there at guardian.co.uk Glastonbury right now, and there will be that special supplement coming out in the Guardian newspaper this Saturday. Kind of a fanzine, really, and you can look back and see if you can spot your tent and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, Music Weekly is going on its summer holes for the next fortnight, but we'll be back later in July with pods from Kate Nash, Finlay Brown, Feist, Royce and Murphy, and a few new bits and pieces too. In the meantime, remember our archives right there at guardian.co.uk/music/podcast. Rosie Swash, enjoy the rest of your birthday.
I shall do my damnedest.
Damnedest. I pity your poor liver. Music Weekly is produced by Ben Green. I am Paul McInnes, and peace be unto yous.
Guardian Unlimited.